the observations of having a really good sub-clover paddocks, maybe putting a crop of wheat on or barley or lupins, and then getting no clover back the following year in the stubble phase was really a worry. We were just getting all the terrible weeds, and we have asked the question around a lot, you know, what has gone wrong? And when you consider that the sprayer works for 3 months of the year here, spraying weeds forever, and the weeds are getting worse. So the big question was, what do we do? And I didn't know where to go. I asked a few agronomists, and because if they're selling chemical, they don't want to tell you what's correct, but I don't really think they knew.
The Biological Farming Roundtable podcast helps farmers explore innovative, low-input, regenerative and profitable farming systems. The Biological Farming Roundtable is sponsored by Nutrisoil, an award-winning biological liquid fertiliser made from a big worm farm. Nutrisoil's purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food. Today's conversation is with Anthony Thomas, and with me co-hosting is Dr. Charles Massey. We recorded this podcast in March when we were there for the Three Springs Biological Farming Roundtable. Anthony and Geraldine farm approximately 8,000 hectares in the North Midlands of WA at Three Springs. Anthony and Geraldine operate Hill Padua Poles, breeding multi-purpose merinos and crop 1,300 hectares regeneratively. Adam Thomas, their great nephew, share farms the rest of the cropping program. Anthony has always been focused on soil health, starting in the 1970s, working with agro-nutritional research laboratories run by the late Tom Arkley, who analysed their soils and pastures. Arden Anderson has been another influence for Anthony. For the past 2 years, Anthony's cropping system has dropped fertiliser inputs down to 5 units of nitrogen and 5 litres of Nutrisoil at sowing and as a follular, and he's been using Nutrisoil and calcium across his pastures. The combination of careful genetic breeding, low-stress sheep management, and working with nature has resulted in quiet, highly fertile sheep that do not require mulesing. His soils are visually increasing in soil organic matter and measuring decreased compaction. Dr. Charles Massey, my special co-host, is a Monero wool grower, a scientist, and a renowned author. His classic book, The Australian Merino, The Story of a Nation, is the account of how merino sheep became one of the main supports of the Australian economy. More recently, Charles's book, Call of the Reed Warbler, A New Agriculture, A New Earth, exemplifies his role as an advocate for regenerative agriculture. This is my enlightening conversation with Anthony Thomas and Dr. Charles Massey. Hello, today I'm here in Western Australia at Three Springs at Anthony and Geraldine Thomas's farm, who farm approximately 8,000 hectares. It's a mixed farming enterprise. I'm also here with Charles Massey, a Monero wool grower, a scientist and a renowned author, who has recently written the book Call of the Reed Warbler, A New Agriculture, A New Earth, which exemplifies his role as an advocate for regenerative agriculture. I have both of us here, or all three of us here today, because we've had the Biological Farming Roundtable on Anthony's property. We had up to 100 farmers yesterday learning about regenerative agriculture. So welcome, both of you.
Good morning, or evening, whatever it is.
So Charles and I will be co-hosting and we'll be asking Ange some questions. Ange, tell us about your farm.
Our farm's a mixed farm. It's merino sheep and we have crop or grain, wheat, barley and lupins, and part of the farm has canola. So we have a share farmer who's my great nephew, and he share farms part of the farm, and then Geraldine and I have got another section where we run sheep on pasture and some stubbles. Our sheep are a multi-purpose type sheep, wool, meat and fertility, where we think fertility is the number one. A lot of people talk about wool cut per head, but we think that's the third in the line.
Anthony, coming here fresh, I've heard about you and known about you for a while, but I know you've been an original thinker and at the forefront of shifting merino genetics to a more modern market adapted sheep, and latterly after that came, you know, big shifts in the way you were increasing the health of the land. So both of those things you've done are what could be called challenging the old paradigms of farming. Just thinking about your sheep, because what I've seen here, it's a large operation, it's incredibly well managed and incredibly profitable, which belies the thinking that this sort of new thinking in genetics, sheep genetics, or, you know, regenerative farming isn't profitable. What's got you onto thinking differently about sheep in the first case?
Well, if I go back to when I left school, my dad had merino sheep brought. He was breeding from a recognised stud breeder, and he was having 60% lambs, 23 micron wool, and cutting about 12 pound, which equates to about 5 kilos. Blowflies, because I was a young fellow and very fit, I could run down a sheep pretty easy, and I learned how to use dagging shears very early in my life. And after a few years of this, I decided we better do something different. So I got an opportunity to meet up with a guy called Jim Shepherd, who was forming the Australian Merino Society at that time, and then we went into measuring sheep we measured everything, and for about 25 years. Until such times as we felt that the Australian Merino Society was measuring micron, and micron alone was sort of breeding wool off. We were getting dust in our wool that was being weighed, and it wasn't a true representative of the actual wool cut. And so we heard about, one morning I heard about a seminar that was in Meneneu, and it was run by a guy called Jim Watts. So me and the guy that was running my sheep, and we headed up there for the day, and after that one day we knew exactly what we had to do. Jim was talking about the surface of a sheep and the appearance of a sheep, and that was going to take all over from measuring. So we actually stopped measuring for about 5 or 6 years, just did all our sheep on visual under Jim's watchful eye, until we got to a point where the Australian sheep breeding values, ASBVs, were coming online, and it was recommended to us that we should start measuring all those traits that was doing, and so off we went. Didn't like the idea of measuring again because we'd been experienced for 25 years, but now we were into it again. And it turned out that our ASBVs, for some reason, were really good right from day one, and after a couple of years of getting this under our belt, we had some of the best in Australia, like up in the top 1%. So, and that's, we've been going 10 or 11 or 12 years now, and we are still up there, just marching ahead. We have now got ASBVs on all our females, so the ewes are performing quite well. We're finding really good ASBVs in those girls, and it's helping our breeding, like, you don't know what, we're just marching ahead.
Yes, so what intrigues me, having been involved in the sheep industry like you for a while, the last 20 years we've seen rapid changes in customer requirements, in market changes, in increasing meat protein demand, all those sorts of things, and shifts in the wool market, and animal welfare issues. And what I've seen here in your sheep, beautiful long necks, wide bodies, lovely skin and wool structure. So what you've done in being this innovator and early adopter is, as you pointed out, probably the weaning percentage is the biggest profit driver because of the price of sheep and the meat demand. You've got fleece rot resistant sheep, you don't have to mules, and you've got a sheep that to me seems to be suited to your environment. And so it's not like you've been a chaser of fads. It seemed to me when you went to that first workshop, your mind was sort of ready and more open than most to see the sense that it was time to shift and to keep evolving. Is that sort of a fair comment on,
yes,
how you work?
It is, and not only that, our sheep are all carefully managed. We use dogs rarely. We can get sheep into the yard without fighting them, and of course that's the worst part. Most farmers that have sheep fight them in the yards. If you've got a good setup, sheep just flow. You don't have to make a noise. And with that plus all the other things like the white wool and the neck and no flies or minimal flies, it is a really good enterprise, and it's a pleasure to run sheep. People don't mind getting sheep into the yard.
The other thing that impressed me about going through your sheep yesterday was not just the fact that they're pole sheep, you don't have fly strike and the aggressiveness and stuff, but they're very placid in temperamental behaviour, which we know there's linkages to disease resistance, but not a dog was needed, and well-designed yard. So it's sort of, it's compared to the old days that we both grew up in, it's a huge shift in both sheep type and the way you treat them and the way you think and matching it to the modern market. It's a really impressive turnout that I saw. Does that sort of summarise it a bit, where you've got to?
Yeah, well, it is. It's the learning bit, isn't it? You do it the hard way, and if you're smart, you'll start doing it the easy way.
The follow-on from that is, it seems to me you've evolved with help, obviously, but because you're open-minded, a sheep type that suits the landscape. And that landscape itself has evolved because you've been one of the... you haven't raced in. As I can understand, like everything, you've considered it carefully, but you can see that the way modern industrial agriculture was the way it was going with increasing chemicals and inputs, fertilisers and all that sort of thing, that your soils weren't performing, as I understood it, and you've carefully but shifting over to a more regenerative, natural way of farming, which seems to suit that sheep type. Is that a reasonable summary of what's happened?
Yes, it is. The observations of having really good sub-clover paddocks, maybe putting a crop of wheat on or barley or lupins, and then getting no clover back the following year in the stubble phase, was really a worry. We were just getting all the terrible weeds, and we have asked the question around a lot, you know, what has gone wrong? And when you consider that the sprayer works for 3 months of the year here, spraying weeds forever, and the weeds are getting worse. So the big question was, what do we do? And I didn't know where to go. I asked a few agronomists, and because if they're selling chemical, they don't want to tell you what's correct, but I don't really think they knew. So it was the Arden Anderson story of maybe the lime. I had another guy tell me that it's probably calcium. And so it was at Maryborough in Queensland where Dr. Arden Anderson actually said, if you haven't put on soluble lime on your farm in recent times, you might be short of calcium. And so that's virtually what we did. We came home and started putting out a product called HiCal at great expense, but we did the 3,000 hectares, half a tonne, so 1,500 tonnes, say. It was expensive, say $40-odd plus freight, 29, and at the same time we started that, we also learnt about our worm juice, and I found out about that from a guy at Darren Machinery Field Days. It was a guy called John Ryan, who makes the DBS bar. He's the builder, the owner, and he sidled up to me and said, we've got all this seed planting department really good, we are placing the seed perfectly, but what are we going to do about microbes? And I was stuck. I said, I don't know. And he said, what about worm juice? And I said, what's worm juice? And he said, it's what comes out the backside of a worm. And he was going to say silly, I think, but he just looked at me a bit silly. Anyway, after that, we drifted apart because his attention is required all the time. Everyone wants to talk to him. And I went over to the ram shed at Darren, and there was a little display there called NutriSoil. I thought I'd better find out what that's about. So I went in, and lo and behold, it was our worm juice. So from then on, it was right. And I decided virtually that minute that I didn't have time to practice on one paddock. I thought I might as well do the whole 3,000 hectares. So I've put 5 litres of NutriSoil on all of our pasture, used it in the crop phase, put on our calcium with the molasses mixed in it, and we're seeing a change instantly.
Yeah.
But we need a couple more years.
Yeah, yep. So you're just starting on that journey. Mm. But just touching on what Charles said, it's about a paradigm. So you were ready, a paradigm shift, you were ready when you walked in. When someone mentioned a worm juice, you were ready to listen. I think a lot of farmers who are traditional farmers would be quite challenged to think that they might put a worm juice out on their property.
Yeah, I suppose that's a silly thing to do, isn't it?
Well, we're finding that that's not the case.
Yes, that's right. So, I was probably ready, yeah. I was looking everywhere for something.
It's an interesting question because, I mean, you and I have knocked around with a lot of ram clients and in the bush for a fair while, and you do see some farmers love chasing the new but often don't think it through or rush in too early and come a cropper with things. You somehow, I'm just wondering if it's your training, your education, but you seem very open to new ideas, but you know how to get on the drafting gate. And as someone said to me once, that cockies have got good crap detectors. You can obviously sniff out the snake oil, and yet are very open to welcoming an innovation once it's proved and tested and listening to good advice. I mean, it's not everyone's got that. Where do you think that's come from? You don't get entrenched in paradigms, it seems to me. You're just constantly learning.
Yeah, well, that's a good question, isn't it? I don't know where I've got it from, really, because my dad was ultra-conservative. I reckon he would have been battling to change, but then the Australian Merino Society, you know, we changed there and did all this fleece weighing and micron testing and all that. It was sort of a thing that we just did. It was a lot of work, but we did it. And I don't know where I got all this stuff from that wants to make me change or stick my neck out like the turtle. What was it? The turtle only puts his neck out when he's advancing.
That's right.
So, the only way to make progress is stick your neck out. That's right.
Yeah. I wonder if it's about the small successes you've had when you did challenge the paradigm. So having the traditional merinos and then starting that breeding the genetics yourself, knowing that there was something better that you could breed.
Yeah, I could probably see a light in the end of the tunnel, really, because I had a really terrible experience with those stud merino sheep, you know, the big wrinkly neck ones, the 1960 models. That was hard work. You know, and we just had to do something different, otherwise we were not going to have sheep, you know. And and besides that, I grew up with a set of yards that were absolutely terrible. You couldn't get sheep anywhere, you know. And so that all taught me as well that I've got to do it better. And we've been lucky over the years. We've had a couple of good guys that designed and played around with yard designs and whatnot, and it's been really good. And we've got facilities now that sheep flow in. You don't have to fight them.
So looking at your sheep you've now got out there, you know, highly fertile, resistant to fleece rot, don't need mulesing, robust, do you think there's a linkage as you're getting your soils healthier, and measurably so, do you think there's a linkage between the health of your sheep and the health of the landscape?
I think that's going to be a definite. I really think I'll get an increase in fleece cut per head that everyone's talking about that they need or whatever. I don't think it's the number one, but I think if we can get healthy soil, we'll have healthy sheep.
And the other critical question that follows from that, as we're hitting the wall with the many modern chemicals, including anthelmintics and other things that are for the overdrenching of sheep, etc., do you think that to have a really healthy landscape in the regenerative terms with good nutrient cycling and all those things, that we need ruminant animals, in this case sheep, in such an environment that the two go together?
Yes, I do. The worm is a really difficult thing. There's a lot of resistance. We've been lucky that about 30 years ago we started using a veterinary, and we wouldn't drench a sheep now without a test. And that's happened for 30 years, really. We send away a dung sample, collected in the paddock with an egg carton. So you get 12 samples if you want to, you get 24 samples. It's off to the vet. He tests them and he tells us whether we need to drench for a start and then maybe what we drench with. And we've done that for a long time. Okay, we can't say in the ASPVs that we're a WEC resistant, but the worm resistance, but it's something we feel that we are anyway.
What's happening is you're getting, as I said, your sheep type is really suitable to these landscapes and this commercial environment and the demand for, with meat protein, for greater fertility, which is a big profit driver, the high lambings you're getting compared to the traditional average. So with that's going, the way you're improving your soils, one of the things that's happening around the world when people get to that stage, some of them tend to move into the new holistic plant grazing, which then starts to even further regenerate your landscape. So it seems like once you get into the grassland component of a cropping landscape, that the ruminant animals really drive that soil ecology even better.
Yeah.
Have you sort of started to consider in time going that way as well?
Or? Yes, we are. We are putting fences in, dividing paddocks, and that'll carry on for a while as we can afford it. And we are hoping that we can sort of move sheep more often and rest paddocks. It's going to be a new experience for us, but we think it's necessary. And I'm lucky I've got a new sheep manager who really likes the idea as well. So, and he's of the opinion we should be able to run something like 20% more sheep by doing this. Whether that's possible or not, I don't know. But all those new ideas are going to be really good to embrace.
Mm, what a positive space. So yesterday we went out across your cropping area and pastures, comparing your regenerative cropping area that you've just sort of started on in the journey and then the traditional cropping area. And we were quite amazed at the results that we saw so early. So things that we saw, the pasture phases, we expected to see a good horizon of organic matter and carbon, so that colour change in your soil. Then we went to the traditional cropping paddocks, which you'd cropped for 10 years. I mean, in this area, I quizzed, it was probably about 40 units of nitrogen as a standard, 50 kilos of MAP, and maybe another nitrogen application if it was a good year. And there was no horizon change in the traditional cropping paddocks. You could see that there was no organic matter building. It was very dry. When we went to your regenerative cropping paddock, which you'd changed from that system to 5 litres of NutriSoil and 5 units of nitrogen, you were using 15 litres of FlexiN in furrow, and then at the 5-leaf stage, so quite a big drop in nitrogen and cutting out that MAP for 2 years, there was a large horizon there, about 10 centimetres of a darker colour, so we could see your organic matter and carbon was starting to build just in that short time. So that was very encouraging.
Nobody was more surprised than me. I'm glad these people turned up and dug some holes in my paddock, because really I keep telling people that I'm only very new at this business, but they have some sort of an inkling already that there's a result. I was surprised, but I like the idea.
It was a great exercise. We all went out as a group and we took our soil measuring tools, and the penetrometer told us a real story. So we were able to do measurements and average out the measurements for each paddock across each of the paddocks. And with those measurements, we could see that in the pasture phase, you had less compaction, and which would have resulted in good infiltration and good root penetration. And then the regenerative cropping paddock was far better than your traditional ones. And then we looked at another neighbouring property as well. The penetrometer readings were very shallow. You needed a lot of pressure to push down on them. And I think sometimes when we drive along and we look at paddocks, we can't see those things. These measuring tools are really essential. And what's even more essential is to take documentation as you go into each paddock. So then it really tells the story. And I could at the end of the day do the numbers and see the soil health ranking of each of the paddocks. So because you're just in 2 years into this regenerative cropping paddock, it is highly likely that if you keep putting together all the pieces and principles of regenerative agriculture, they could be just as healthy or even healthier than the pasture paddocks. And this is what we're finding. Diane and Haggerty have found that their biological cropping paddocks were healthy or healthier than pasture paddocks. And this is the really exciting thing we're finding in regenerative agriculture. It's putting all the pieces together, and you're very humble. You know you're at the start. The first thing you did was you reduced your fertilisers. Your spraying regime is still the same. What's your next steps?
My next step, I think, is to try and reduce sprays. We are learning about fulvic acid. We've got a lot to learn yet. And if we can get something going on that line this year even, we should start to make some advancement, really. And I suppose we should start doing a soil test. We have done lots of soil tests since 1970. Like I've got, I don't know, I've got hundreds of soil tests. But we have to start doing this now on this new system we're in. And we just need someone to supervise that. And I think we'll probably see some good results.
And the other thing that impressed me about going out with you and the Nutrisoil team yesterday, because I was on the end of the penetrometer, was in those traditional soils, how tough that hard pan was, initially from the old ploughshare, but now from the sprays and lack of, you know, root penetration, lack of biological activity. And so even within 2 years, when we pushed it in your cropping soils that were turning over to more regenerative approach, there was an initial little hard pan of from the chemicals. But then once you push through that, that penetrometer went down the full length, which is about a metre, isn't it?
Yep.
So the message there is that you're going to capture any rain event that comes along, and you're getting much deeper root penetration, and that soil horizon came so quickly. It was really exciting to see in such a short period, I thought.
Yeah. We did notice also that in the pastures and where you'd been putting the biology, you had more ant nests.
Yeah, we did notice that, didn't we?
Yeah. And you don't get a lot of worms out here in this dry area, but your ants are that workforce, you know, doing the tunnelling and making those aeration tunnels in your soil.
Not yet, anyway. We're hoping to see some worms one day.
Yep, absolutely.
Those horizon soils were so much moister than the dry traditional stuff.
Yeah, cooler, moister.
Extraordinary, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Going back to the fulvic acid, why did you want to start putting that into the system?
I read that book, For the Love of Soil, by Nicole Masters, and I read in there where we can reduce our chemical by probably a third, maybe half, by using some fulvic acid. Well, fulvic acid, I didn't even know what it was. I ended up by asking a chiropractor over in Coolangatta, what's fulvic acid? And he looked at me a bit silly and said, it's in all the greens you eat. And I thought, well, that's handy, but I've got to buy a few shuttles of it. So we'll see how we go. We've got to find all that out yet. That's all new for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you read the book For the Love of Soil, it's on page 98. So to reduce non-selective, non-residual herbicides by 30%, add one part fulvic acid to four parts herbicide. You could also add a worm liquid. It has fulvic acid in it, or a worm extract. That's another thing you could do. The big key there is that we can start reducing these chemicals in the system. We saw in Charles's talk yesterday that just 0.1 part per billion is starting to affect human health. And the allowable limit in wheat is 5 milligrams per kilogram to be sold, and in barley 10 milligrams per kilogram. And that's very concerning for human health. So trying to reduce that chemical load in the system by using fulvic acid, and potentially by not spraying out over summer, which I hear you haven't been doing much of.
Well, we don't get summer rain lately, but if we've only got our evil melon, which is our problem really. And I'm hearing stories yesterday that one guy hasn't got a melon growing, and there's others that another guy told me that his sheep are eating the melons. Well, if we can get to that stage, that'll be fantastic. But if we keep going forward, I'm thinking that melons probably won't get a chance to grow. The environment won't be right for them.
And just listening to your answer there a minute ago on now you're going to trial fulvic acid, you know, you've done your homework and you're not scared to embrace new ideas. Do you find, as you've shifted into innovation in sheep breeding to match modern requirements and your landscape, and now you're shifting your whole cropping program, do you enjoy the excitement of, is that what makes you get out of bed now, that without overdoing it and chasing every fad? It seems to me it's calculated, but is that sort of part of why you're so optimistic and positive about your farming?
Yeah, I think it is. There's something out there that we've got to chase, and I'm not too worried about chasing it. The good thing is that the sheep industry right now is all good, and so we can take a few risks. And the sheep, wool, meat, they'll all still be there, so regardless of what happens. And if I can improve our pastures, improve this fulvic acid, reduce our chemicals, and reduce the pesticides and the fungicides, well, it's got to be all good.
Because actually what you're doing, other than improving the health of your farm, the product that you're selling in the way of food and fibre is better for the consumers as well. And indeed you can go one step further and say putting more carbon in the soil and all those sort of things, reducing poison, you're helping the planetary crisis as well. So it's a pretty meaningful role that we can play as, you know,
yep,
more innovative farmers, isn't it?
Yep, and especially in the wool part. We've already had premiums for wool. The last clip we sold was to a lady called Stella McCartney, who's got a big empire on fashion. And a representative of her company was going to come here and audit us again. And if we can get those sorts of things going with the meat as well, we really are in a good time to go farming.
Yeah, absolutely. The consumer is changing. So as a farmer, we need to be aware of that. As even in the cropping industry, international markets are asking for lower residue in their grain. And so a lot of farmers are out there getting their grain tested to see what residue they do have in their grain. Diane Ian Haggerty have recently found the lowest test that I've ever seen is 0.005 parts per million detectable level, and they had no residues on their grain whatsoever. And they use some chemical but a very biologically active system. So what that's telling us is that the biology is breaking down these residues of chemicals in the soil when you've got that whole holistic system happening and all of the principles working together.
Well, that's a fantastic story, really. If we can achieve all that, well, we're onto something, all right, because if we're getting a wool premium, then we start getting a meat premium, then we start getting a grain premium, well, yeah, can't get better than that.
Absolutely. So where to from here, Ange?
Just to much of the same. Just keep making our sheep better, our land better, and the crops better. It's a good thing that we're trying to do, and quite frankly, I like every minute of it. It's probably going to stop me from retiring.
And what about the challenges? What challenges have you experienced? You seem to be quite a happy person all the time. Is there anything you've found really difficult in any of these transitions, working with nature more than working in the traditional system?
No. It's all positive. I probably am a happy chappy, but that's how we are.
Certainly are, yes.
That's how we are. And we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
From my point of view, Ange, it's been an absolute privilege coming to see such a tight, well-run, neat operation that is right at the cutting edge of matching sheep genetics to a healthier landscape. And that just shows you that, you know, this isn't snake oil, it's not just fads, it's profitable and doable and long-lasting, and it's been a tremendous time to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, we thank Geraldine as well for her hospitality. What a wonderful household that we've all been welcomed into, with lots of like-minded people around working towards a healthier farming system, healthier people and a healthier planet.
And I'm very glad that you were all here as well. So I'd like to thank you all, because just digging the holes in the paddock was enlightening.
Lots of fun.
And you've been good company. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Wonderful. Thanks, Ange. Well, we'll wrap that up.
Thank you.
Please follow the Biological Farming Roundtable podcast. Share it with your friends and networks. I'm Nicola Maddick and I work at Nutrisoil, a liquid biological fertiliser made from a big worm farm whose purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food.